Who's Afraid of Christian Nationalism? That is the title of a new book, and the subtitle is Why Christian Nationalism is Not an Existential Threat to America or the Church. The author of this book is historian and professor Dr. Mark David Hall. A post on the book for Amazon says, quote, American Christian nationalism exists and is problematic, but contrary to its many critics, it does not pose an existential threat to American democracy or the Christian church, end quote. Dr. Hall has written other books before on the pivotal role of faith in American history. Mark David Hall is a professor in Regent University's Robertson School of Government, director of religious liberty in the States, and a senior fellow at the Center for Religion, Culture, and Democracy. And he joins us now on Vocal Point to discuss the whole subject of so-called Christian nationalism. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Dr. Hall, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
It's great to be chatting with you again.
Sure. Okay, so there's been a lot of hullabaloo, to put it nicely, about the whole subject of Christian nationalism. Can you cut through the fog? And I think the best thing to do is just go ahead and define it. And I think maybe the best way to do it is to define it as different groups define it, if that makes sense. In other words, I think the same term is being used to describe maybe three or four different phenomenon.
So that's exactly right. And let me just point out, no one is using the phrase Christian nationalism before 2006. Beginning in 2006, polemical critics started warning of this dire threat of Christians who want to take over America for Christ and literally oppress everyone except for white Christian males. So they're racist, they're sexist, they want to return to the land of Jim Crow, they think women should be barefoot and pregnant, and this sort of thing. And so we should be very, very afraid. Religious minorities, of course, would be oppressed. And so you have a steady stream of books, one after the other, usually about one every 2 years coming out warning of this threat. And then with the election of Donald Trump, this literature just absolutely exploded, and academics started getting involved. People like Andrew Whitehead and Samuel Perry, sociologists at respectable schools who came out with a book, Taking America Back for God. And they purport to measure scientifically that 51.9% of Americans fully or partially embrace this toxic stew. Again, racism, sexism, militarism. And so we should be very afraid. And I have to tell you, Jerry, even though I'm a white Christian male, I would be very afraid if 51.9% of my fellow citizens embrace this sort of toxic stew. One of the things that I do in my book is I make it crystal clear that this threat doesn't exist, that this is a ridiculous threat. Yes, there are racist and sexist Americans out there who would like to return us to the days of Jim Crow, the sort of people who showed up at the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. But this is a tiny fraction of 1% of the American people. There were about 300 people at that Charlottesville rally, for instance. And so I say this as a Christian. Christians do dumb things. And so after about 16 years of this literature in 2022, for the first time, you have some Christians who step out and say, oh, I'm a Christian nationalist. So I'm thinking here of Marjorie Taylor Greene, Stephen Wolfe, Doug Wilson to a degree. And of course, what they mean is they mean something very different. I think they mean something more akin to Christian patriotism in most cases. A few academics like Stephen Wolfe, building on the ideas of Roussas Rashtuni, do argue for a Christian sort of theocracy or theonomy. But again, this is a kind of abstract intellectual movement that would be of interest to very few Americans, except for a few idiosyncratic Calvinists. And I say that as someone fairly favorably, who looks favorably on Calvinism as a theological construct. Okay, so you have the polemical critics and you have the relatively handful of Christians who are actually advocating for Christian nationalism. And I'm critical of those Christian advocates. I think there's good reason to reject what they have on offer. What I end up doing in the book then is I contend that Christian nationalism exists, that really it has to do with the government favoring Christianity above other religions. Having Congress declare America formally to be a Christian country, having teachers in public schools lead children in Christian prayers, and that sort of thing. About 20% of Americans embrace these views. I think in their minds, what they'd like to do is return America to the 1950s minus the racism, minus the sexism. In other words, you know, they're happy with putting a God we trust on our currency, including the words under God in the pledge, banning drag queen story hours, having prayer in public school. They're very comfortable with these sorts of things, and they would like to return to that sort of culture. I do contend, though, I give prudential, constitutional, biblical, and theological reasons for why even conservative Christians should reject this benign form of Christian nationalism. So that's a very quick overview of the entire book, just published about a month ago, Who's Afraid of Christian Nationalism?
Okay, can you just hone in on your comments to conservatives that you just mentioned a few moments ago that would like to see prayer back in the public schools, but you're saying we should be careful what we wish for? Can you elaborate?
I think so, and I was being kind of quick. Back when we had prayer in public schools, usually what would happen is a committee of government officials would write the prayer. And they would write this in the most non-offensive way possible. And so I'm paraphrasing, but it would go something like this. Oh, God, please bless our day. Help us to work hard and learn a lot and be good. Amen. Now, note that's not a distinctively Christian prayer. Conceivably, a Muslim or a Jewish student could hear that prayer and be thinking, oh, yeah, God, I worship God as well. I just happen to think that God is not particularly honored by such rote prayers said by teachers who might not believe them. And so I think, you know, that there's no good Christian reason to have those sorts of prayers. Now, if we start talking about much more distinctive, much more meaningful prayers, then I think we have to ask ourselves, what does the golden rule require? I don't know about you, Jerry, but I wouldn't want to send my kids to public schools where a Muslim teacher is leading Islamic prayers. And so I should understand how my Islamic neighbor doesn't want to send her children to public schools where the teacher is leading children in Christian prayers. So I think the golden rule would say we shouldn't be doing this at all in public schools. But let me hasten to say I'm not a real big fan of public schools. What I'd love to see is a very robust voucher sort of system or charter school sort of system where we can have Christian schools, Islamic schools, secular schools, and parents can actually send their children to schools that reflect their worldview. And then the Christian schools should be as robustly Christian as they possibly can be. And that's one reason my wife and I sacrificed a great deal to make sure our children had a Christian education as opposed to a quote unquote neutral education.
Which is interesting because, okay, you and your wife then were sacrificing that way. But in the meantime, your tax dollars were going to pay for an education that your children did not receive, but you paid for because you're a taxpayer. So in a sense, you're double taxed in that context until we have kind of a more of a, you know, full voucher system all clear across the board, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And believe me, it was financially stressful for us. And that's why I love the direction. You know, the Supreme Court has been excellent over the last 7 years or so, making it crystal clear that states cannot discriminate against religious schools. If they're going to fund private schools, they can't say we're only going to fund non-religious private schools. Maine recently had its wrist slapped because it would fund children going to high schools in certain circumstances, and these can be religious high schools as long as they're not too religious. And the Supreme Court said, no, Maine, you don't get to discriminate on that basis. And we're seeing, especially in red states, an explosion of charter programs in which religious schools can participate, all sorts of voucher programs, tax savings plans, and this sort of thing. So I love the direction our country is going, at least in red states, and I think it's wholly salutary for Christians.
Okay, I want to go back to Charlottesville for a moment. Charlottesville, the whole debate there, it began when the authorities there in that community wanted to remove a statue of Robert E. Lee. Okay, now, Robert E. Lee was an important historical figure, you know, in American experience, and was a self-proclaimed Christian by all means. You know, I mean, he said that. He had happened to have been born a few miles south of the Mason-Dixon line, the Civil War probably would have been a lot better for everybody if he had been born just a little bit north of the, of that Mason-Dixon line. So he would have fought for the Union. He felt like he couldn't betray Virginia. But in the meantime, I don't think those tiki soldiers or whatever they were, those tiki torch folks, you know, were any fans of Robert E. Lee. They certainly weren't like him in terms of his kind of ethics and so forth. And I can understand people saying, okay, the statue has been up long enough and let's put it in a museum or whatever. But who were those people, the Unite the Right people? Who were they? They don't represent me.
No, that's exactly right. I actually have a section on my, in my book on this. Basically, it's an alt-right, what we're calling nowadays alt-right. So in the old days, racists met together in person around bonfires and they wore hoods, right? I'm thinking here of the KKK. Those groups have almost completely disappeared. The KKK actually had a rally in Charlottesville a few weeks before the Unite the Right rally, and maybe a dozen or two dozen people came, and that's why you didn't hear anything about it. You know, the alt-right really is an online phenomenon. You have these very virulent racists who are meeting and saying horrific things, you know, that we must preserve the white race and Jews are horrible and this sort of thing. And so this rally in Charlottesville was intended to bring these different online groups together in person for the first time. And I think the fact that they're online gives them an impression that there's lots of people like that out here. But this rally intended to bring these folks together, maybe 300 people. You can scroll through the sort of signs and symbols that they carried around. Their Aryan Nation and a bunch of other weird groups that many of which I hadn't heard of before I did the research for this. And they no Christian symbols whatsoever. And again, in looking at this literature, it turns out that these alt-right types actually don't like Christianity because they understand that Christianity teaches that all humans are created in the Imago Dei, the image of God, and should be treated with respect and dignity. And so Christianity gets in the way of their white supremacist fantasies. So yeah, we have to distinguish and make a very careful distinction between the sort of alt-right racism and Christian nationalism, which again I think does exist. You could want prayers in public schools. You could even want Christian prayers in public schools, and that doesn't make you a racist.
Now, look at today's campuses where you have these protesters, many of whom are wearing masks, the pro-Hamas people. Some of them are saying death to Israel, death to America. Some of them are virulently anti-Jewish.
Yeah, no, I find this very, very distressing, and I have no idea why universities are putting up with it. You know, of course, they have a right to freedom of speech, but the minute they start breaking the rules of the campus by breaking into buildings and burglarizing things, vandalizing things, camping where they aren't supposed to be, I have no idea why the university presidents aren't calling in the police officers and arresting them. And even if the prosecutors don't prosecute them, continue to arrest them. Don't put up with this. Our Jewish students deserve nothing less.
Okay, we have about 1 minute left. There was an MSNBC commentator who said a couple months ago in terms of Christian nationalism, well, these Christian nationalists, they believe that our rights don't come from the government. Our rights come from God. Can you believe that? She said to a panel. And I'm thinking, didn't the founding fathers say that?
That's right. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is, of course, from the Declaration of Independence. Yeah, the founders uniformly believed that rights came from God. Even someone like Thomas Jefferson, who's not an Orthodox Christian, grasped that reality. But the Orthodox Christians among the founders, of which there were many, absolutely understood that fact.
MarkDavidHall.org, that's your website for more information. How many books have you written these days so far?
15 books between
written,
sole authored, and co-edited in some cases.
Okay, and again, the name of the new one is Who's Afraid of Christian Nationalism? Why Christian Nationalism is Not an Existential Threat to America or the Church. Again, Dr. Mark David Hall, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thanks so much, Jerry.